Chapter 33. Ship, said Daniel. This is 6. We'll be extracting from Matrix above Todos Santos in a few minutes. Adele shielded him from the chatter in the intercom, but because of the sissy's internal hush at this point in a voyage, he heard Spacer shouting, Yeehaw! And booze and women! Followed a moment later by McGinnis calling, You can keep the women. This time I want a pretty little boy who's hung like a pony. McGinnis was a rigger, waiting in her suit at the airlock with the rest of the starboard watch in case Wojens and the port watch unexpectedly needed help lowering the minimal sail set with which the Corvette had made this last leg of the run. Daniel thought of her, a squat stump of a woman with a face like a pug dog, and the pretty boy she wanted. But McGinnis was a spacer with money in her pocket, and she'd get whatever she wanted until the money ran out. "Now listen, sissies," Daniel said, smiling in the knowledge that though he commanded his crew, they were his family as surely as he was part of theirs. "When we left Todos Santos, we were on friendly terms with everybody except some folks from Plessuance. Those folks aren't around anymore." He paused for laughter. "But a lot can change in a month," he continued. "Just ask the garrison of Lauren's base about that if you don't believe me." More laughter. They'd been through a lot this voyage. The sissies never doubted that Daniel was captain, but this was a good time for him to remind them that he was their captain, the man who wouldn't send them any place he wouldn't go himself. "There may have been political changes here," he said, "and there may well be an alliance ship in port, in which case we won't stay any longer than it takes me to input the course data I've already prepared. They'd have been safer if they remained in company with Aristo Xenos. Alliance warships might be willing to disregard the cluster government long enough to overwhelm an RCN corvette, but not in front of a cluster battleship. Though seriously battered by the strains of the Matrix and explosive failures in her own armaments, the Zany remained an impressive sight. Jenna had come alone because the Aristo Xenos had only 6 high-drive motors functioning out of the original 48. Her systems rated a complement of nearly 1,000, but her present crew was 250 former RCN crewmen, supplemented by an equal number of their retainers who didn't have any experience off-planet. The 10-star cluster had no lack of experienced spacers, but only a handful of them had been willing to sign on with a decayed battleship. Not even those few would have boarded if they'd been told the details of a plan they'd had found insane. The Aristo Xenos had been lucky to arrive off Radiance as quickly as she did, and it'd take her longer to get home. The Princess Cecile would have added a minimum of 9 days to her voyage if she returned to Todos Santos with the battleship. "We've taken enough chances this voyage, sissies," Daniel said. "I don't want to put us through more." 6, this is 5, Tunin announced in an apologetic voice from the Battle Direction Center. "We'll be re-entering normal space in 1 minute, over." "Roger, Mr. Tunin," Daniel said. "Break. Ship prepare to return to sidereal space." He pressed the control. "Now!" The Princess Cecile shuddered into sidereal space like a fish swimming through transparent glycerin instead of water. Daniel wasn't really worried about what would happen over Todos Santos unless colossal bad luck brought them out of the Matrix within spitting distance of an Alliance warship. Nobody should be looking for them here. People would notice the Corvette's arrival and some might have hostile intentions, but Daniel had full confidence in Adele's ability to identify a problem in time for the sissy to escape. They'd refill their tanks of reaction mass on an uninhabited world a day out from here. They could make it to Cinnabar on their present load if they had to, though it'd mean short rations by the time they arrived. Present reality returned with a crystalline suddenness that turned all the previous time in the Matrix into a half-remembered nightmare. It wasn't really bad while you were in it, but when you came out, you had a sticky itchiness on your soul, like the way your skin felt after swimming in salt water. The Princess Cecile was 80,000 miles above Todos Santos. The PPI was full of ships. To Daniel's momentary horror, a voice over a laser communicator, which proved that the sissy had not only been noticed, but that she'd been located with such a precision as fire control would require, said, "RCS Melampus to unidentified vessel. Identify yourself immediately. Over." In the lower right-hand corner of Daniel's display appeared a box of text in red outline from Adele. 13 country craft. RCS Melampus Diana Seahorse Clyde Capilla. There were details of size, armament, and table of organization, crew strength, but Daniel knew all that, or knew it well enough for his purposes. The first 4 Cinnabar vessels were destroyers. The Capilla was a battleship which had been in Harbor 3 when the Princess Cecile lifted as the Klimov's private yacht. Melampus, this is Starship Princess Cecile out of Xenos with a former RCN crew aboard, Daniel said. He was careful not to claim to be a naval vessel, as he had done without hesitation when signaling anybody else. We arrived to take on supplies for the run home, but finding you here, I'd like to report to somebody on your commander's staff, if that's possible. Sissy, over. There was a pause. Daniel turned to his gunner. Call in across the bridge because he didn't want to risk accidentally transmitting to ships whose missileers were ready to launch. Daniel said, Son, lock your guns now. We can't afford a mistake. These people might be sorry to have killed us when they figure things out, but they're not going to miss. Princess Cecile, is Lieutenant Leary your captain? Over, the destroyer said at last. Daniel heard the 4-inch turrets clack into the fore and aft position that kept them from shifting when the vessel was under power. He pursed his lips, then said, Roger, Melampus. This is former Lieutenant Leary. Melampus? We're on a ballistic course, waiting for direction as to how we should proceed. Over. After a longer pause, a different voice, Adele's text crawl read from RCS Capilla, said, Princess Cecile, this is movement control. You to land in berth A-12 San Juan Harbor immediately. A vehicle will be waiting to transport Lieutenant Leary and Signals Officer Monday to the RCN Ground Detachment Headquarters. Do you understand? Over. Movement control, Daniel said, frowning but trying hard to keep his voice neutral. Do we need clearance by the cluster authorities also? Over. Princess Cecile, there are no cluster authorities anymore in regard to space travel, the voice from the Capilla said. This is RCN territory, mister. Carry out your orders. Over. Daniel met Adele's eyes across the bridge. She was nodding and wore what was for her a broad grin. Roger that. Movement control. Sissy out. He looked at his display, the Battle Direction Center, which probably meant Vessi, as tuning simply wasn't quick enough to have done it, offered a landing solution that would bring them down at San Juan in an orbit and a half. Daniel grinned. Mr. Tuning, do you feel comfortable about landing this time? Yes, sir, said Tuning. I mean, it's pretty straight, isn't it, sir? I mean, it looks pretty straight to me. Over. And to me as well, Tuning, Daniel said, releasing his shock harness. You have the con break. Officer Mundy, I know we ought to be strapped in for landing, but you and I need to get into our dress white soonest, and that means getting started now. Six out. The main hatch lowered with a wheezy sigh swirling in the air of the Todos Santos. Hot steam had boiled from harbor water mixed with garbage and lubricants and was shot through with ozone. Adele smiled. She'd come to associate that complex of odors with safe landings. Smelling it again gave her a feeling of nostalgic warmth. Riggers were mooring the Princess Cecile bow and stern. Here in the entry compartment, a team of shipside spacers under a petty officer tilted the gangplank out by hand and let it clang to the key instead of bothering with the hydraulic extender. Two of them ran across and tied the shore end off to bits. The horizon rose and fell gently as the corvette rocked on waves she created when she'd landed. Through the dissipating steam, Adele could see an all-terrain ground vehicle, a bug of a body supported on four huge knitted wire wheels, waiting on the key. The front bench was open, except for a roll cage mounting on an automatic impeller, but the back was enclosed. The fenders bore stenciled cinnabar markings. "Ready, master?" said Hogg, resplendent in pantaloons, a ruffle shirt, and a broad silk sash, in contrasting colors. He didn't carry a weapon openly. They were going to meet cinnabar officials, not the benighted locals, after all. Except Adele knew the term in Hogg's mind was closer to fucking wogs. Tovera was in an off-white pantsuit. It sounded conspicuous, but the creamy fabric didn't glow even in bright sunshine, and in the shade looked like a splotched wall. She carried her attaché case for no better reason than Daniel checked the set of his saucer hat. It was what you did when you left the ship. "Yes, I think we are," Daniel said, grinning at Adele. Hogg swaggered down the gangplank in a mixture of pride and truculence. They'd done great things in the North, but that was in the past. Now they must deal with the present. The ordinary machinery of the RCN was concerned with the way things were accomplished as well as what things were. Hogg, for all his blustering countryman's appearance, had a sophisticated awareness of the distinction. He'd have been hanged long since if he hadn't. Daniel strode toward the key ahead of Adele as befit his rank. Tovera was last of all, the secretary too commonplace to notice, especially with Hogg in front to draw attention. The two made a good team, as good as Daniel and Adele did, in their different fashion. Tovera understood the risks of doing the right thing the wrong way as clearly as Adele did, but neither of them cared enough about their own lives for that to matter. Daniel, on the other hand, loved life and pleasure as much as any other soul aboard the Princess Cecile. If all went well, he'd be relaxing tonight, just as his spacers did, with enough liquor to float the corvette and one or more air-headed bimbos to share it with him. But if Daniel knew with absolute certainty that doing the right and necessary thing would cause him to be executed by his own government, he'd do what he thought was right and necessary. Hogg would be beside him, muttering that the master was a damn fool, and all the sissies would be following. The car's driver got out as soon as Adele and Daniel started across the gangplank. At their approach, he opened the door to the rear compartment. Hogg turned and raised an eyebrow toward Daniel. The driver said, "Why don't you servants ride up front with me, eh?" Why don't you button your lip till we hear what the master wants, eh, boy? Hoggs said. His tone was pleasant enough, despite the words. Adele glanced into the back of the vehicle. Cushion seats faced one another in pairs. Lieutenant Wilsing sat in the middle, bending forward to look at them. "Come on up front with me, Hogg," Tavera said in an unusually loud voice for her. "I've met the gentleman. Mistress Mundy can handle any trouble that he causes." Daniel nodded smilingly to Hogg, then handed Adele into the seat and went around to the other side himself. The car started off as soon as he closed the door behind him. The tires made a ringing hum in the pavement. "Captain," Adele said, "this is Lieutenant Wilsing. You may remember him from when the Princess Cecile was fitting out in Harbor One." Adele had sent a coded report to the Capilla when she found a receiver to handshake with hers. She hadn't been certain until then that Mistress Sands' organization was participating in this operation, but she wasn't at all surprised that it was. It was clearly more than an RCN initiative. "Yes, I do," Daniel said in an instant tone that showed he not only remembered, he understood. "Good morning, Wilsing." "I am an aide to Captain Carnoletz, who's head of the RCN ground detachment here," Wilson explained. "We've only been here 2 days, so matters are still being sorted out. Count Climov arrived in Xenos on a Cinnabar freighter from Todos Santos, telling of how you'd located an Alliance squadron on Radiance. The Count had recovered the Earth Diamond here in the north, which proved he couldn't be entirely a crackpot." Wilson spread his hands with a supercilious smile. Admiral Anston took the report seriously enough to scrape together a squadron to set up a base on Todos Santos, and a civilian advisor, Mistress Sand, obviously, convinced some important senators that there should be an advisory mission to help Governor Sakama through the present difficult situation. He retains control of the 10-star cluster, of course, but, well, we couldn't have the Alliance setting up a base here as well as on Radiance, could we? "The Alliance squadron's been pretty well scotched," Daniel said. He cleared his throat. "The base on Gehenna is still usable, though, most of it. It's something Admiral Keith will need to deal with. That is, I assume the Admiral will want to prevent the Alliance from reoccupying the base." "Scotched?" Wilsing repeated in a rising tone that filled Adele with a mixture of embarrassment and fury. "Well, my goodness, if that's true, it's very fortunate. There was a good deal of concern as to how the Capilla was going to perform against two modern Alliance battleships. She'd been relegated to guardship duties, you know." "The lieutenant's statement is quite true," Adele said. "As one would expect of anything said by a Leary of Bantry, of course." Wilsing's tongue touched the corner of his mouth. "Of course, I... And as for concern, Wilsing," Daniel said, smiling but with a muscle at the back of his jaw jumping, "I doubt it was shared by any real RCN officer. The day an RCN battleship can't see off a couple wogs, I'll join the priesthood, eh, Mundy?" "You'd look remarkably silly in robes, Captain," Adele said with a hard smile for Wilsing's benefit. "But I doubt either of us will live to see that happen." The vehicle slowed to a halt, its tires singing on a descending note. A section of street was closed off with razor ribbon and concrete barriers, guarded at each end by an armored vehicle mounting a plasma cannon and a squad of the land forces of the Republic. Wilsing nodded with a fixed smile. "The ground detachment has been granted these buildings by Governor Sakama," he said. "We'll walk from here, if you don't mind." Daniel left and got out the door Hogg opened for him. "Well, Mundy," he said, "it looks better than some of the places we've been together, doesn't it?" Arm in arm and with their servants, they followed the discomfited Lieutenant Wilsing through a narrow entrance to the headquarters of the new government of the 10-star cluster.